No. I am your father.
True. That's impossible!
Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
No! No!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Pod Stallions. This is Jason Lindsay making the intro for a change, and to my left is my compadre from Canada, Brian Hyler.
Hey.
How are you, Brian?
Better now that you took over the intro, let me tell
you.
Yeah.
Well, we got to mix it up every now and then. We figure 75 episodes in, we should switch it up and I can do the intro.
Yeah, and it has been quite a few episodes since we've tackled Star Wars. Believe it or not, I think it's been well over a year.
Has it?
Yeah, it just feels like yesterday.
Do you remember how that last one went?
No, but it was so long ago our voices hadn't cracked.
Well, that's in line with when we first saw Star Wars, and then it changed by the time we got to Empire, so this is perfect.
I'm a man now. I can probably get back into the swing of it. I think we kind of left it off just before Empire. I know I was talking about being very distracted by things like Black Hole and Star Trek the Motion Picture, and but of course once Empire came to town, all my affairs were back in order for a brief time, and I was completely devoted to Star Wars. I don't know about you.
Yeah, it's that weird thing that we discussed, and we talked about, didn't we do an episode about like sort of knockoffs, Star Wars and its ilk in the wake of Star Wars, all the things that sort of came out?
Oh, yeah, we did, actually. Yeah, you mean like the Battle Beyond the Stars and yeah.
Yeah, and, it's just all that stuff, they were placeholders until Empire came around, we didn't really realize how many things would be fixtures, how many things would end up being franchises. Ironically, when you think about all those, this just occurred to me, and I think it probably needs some more thorough research to come up with a hypothesis. Or a thesis, or however that goes. But besides Star Trek the Motion Picture leading to Star Trek II The Wrath of Khan, which would be in that wilderness between Star Wars and Empire, did anything else become a franchise? Did any of those other things that were Star Wars hopefuls or, sci-fi, hopeful type things, did any of them spawn franchises?
I can't think of anything.
And I don't think Tron counts because that was like 50 years later.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Tron doesn't count at all.
Careful.
No, I just mean because it was, they might as well have just remade it.
Right.
After that many years. Yeah, gosh. You know what? I can't think. Superman?
Superman.
But again, just like Star Trek, these are established popular characters.
Right, so the Black Hole, Battle Beyond the Stars, like none of those, Megaforce. I mean, if anything should have been a franchise, it was Megaforce.
I gotta say, though, I'm not sure the Black Hole was really meant for a sequel.
Oh, come on!
or yeah, okay.
I mean, when you say meant for, for the world to get, maybe not, but that thing was as open-ended as a open-ended thing can be, that's open-ended on the end of an open thing.
Okay, but Battlestar went right to TV. Buck Rogers went right to TV.
Yes.
Everybody died in Battle Beyond the Stars.
See?
Yeah. Sorry, spoilers.
Spoilers?
Yeah.
Shit. Guess I don't need to revisit that flick. Well, there you go. Well, we're digressing.
Boy, are we ever.
It wouldn't be an episode of Pod Stallions if we didn't digress. The reason that we're going to talk about this particular topic, which is The Empire Strikes Back specifically, and everything that surrounded that film, a couple of reasons. One, we're rapidly running out of topics. No,
but this is true.
No. That's not it.
Help us.
It's sort of in the wake of the Episode 7 trailer, Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awoken.
It's the first I've heard of it.
In case this is the first you're hearing about it, pause the show and get to a computer and look for this trailer for Star Wars Episode 7.
Let me just put the brakes on.
Yes.
Let's not give an opinion. Let's be the one website you can't find an opinion of it.
And not say how we feel about the
because episode. I wanted to hit every third person on Twitter in the head with a brick the day that thing landed.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like some of the like, you know,
I don't even tweet.
I was bawling at my fist when I'd read sorry, but I you know.
Wait, what was it?
60 seconds.
Wait, what did it say? Sorry, but what?
Sorry, but I, you know, and it's some crappy comment about it. And it's just like, yeah, you know, I don't even know if it's sincere or what, but it just dripped in this weird, like, let's put it right back to Empire. My first glimpse of Empire was a kid in the last day of school brought the Toronto Sun in.
Mm-hmm.
Which is our local rag with, you know, a page three girl and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And it had a picture of 3PO with his leg off. And
singing the Falcon, right?
Blew my mind.
Yes.
And the next thing I did, and this is actually a spoiler, mm-hmm. was I bought the Marvel Super Special.
Oh, you did.
Adaptation. My dad, I talked my dad into like, remember you're supposed to give me an allowance? And he was like, what? And then he just handed me $2. That never worked again, and it only worked once. So I bought it, and I got in the car, and I was, I've never been a linear reader, like, you know, page one. I flipped through everything, and as a kid, I was like, oh, no, something happens to Han Solo.
Oh, no. You jumped around.
I jumped around. I do that.
You were one of those kids. Well, here's the thing. Star Wars, as we discussed in the previous episode, and as most people can agree, was our life.
Sure.
From 77 to 80, and all the things that we've sort of talked about, Starlog, magazine, and the movies that we were into, and toys, and all that stuff. I mean, a lot of it can be brought back to that that movie. Which, led to interest in lots of other things. So to say that Empire was anticipated is a massive understatement. And the one thing I will bring back to this Episode 7 trailer, and I will not give an opinion on it, but the one thing I will say is that I would put money down on and there's no way, I guess, to really factually back this up. But I would try to put money down and say this is the single most anticipated film in motion picture history, period. Now, I know what you're thinking. The first thing people are going to say is, what about Episode 1, The Phantom Menace?
Or Glitter.
Exactly. Fair enough, Episode 1, hugely anticipated. This one, more so, and I'll tell you why. Because if you put guns to everyone's heads way back in the mid-90s and said, would you rather have a brand new trilogy for Star Wars going back and telling the story that you'd already heard about and you kind of have an idea of what happened, knowing the outcome without many surprises, who lives, who dies, etc., for three films? Or would you rather have three new films that pick up where Return of the Jedi left off? I'll bet you the majority of those people would have said the latter. They would have wanted an extension of the story or the adventures of the characters that we already knew from those beloved films, that trilogy from way back when.
You know what? I'll tell you. Oh, sorry. I'm kind of coming in there on your.
No, I'm just saying. I say that this is the most anticipated film of all time. Then, if I was going to make a roster, second most anticipated film of all time must have been Episode One, The Phantom Menace, and which means that the third most anticipated film in history, in motion picture history, had to be The Empire Strikes Back, because it was. This was a, you know, Star Wars changed everything, and it was the biggest movie of all time. You know, and you know what's funny is you look back on, thank God for YouTube, it's so amazing. When you look back on things like the Today Show or the Mike Douglas Show or things like that, God, you know, there's one junket that it's Harrison Ford and Anthony Daniels. They're handling interviews together. Then there's one that's Hamill and Ford together. Then there's one that's, you know, Fisher, Hamill, and Ford all together. Boy, are they taking it in their stride. They are just so lackadaisical about this success. They're acknowledging the success, but they you would not think they have an ounce of pressure on them to deliver with this thing, you know, called The Empire Strikes Back. So that's just a little side note. So your first inkling or look at anything from the new film was that shot of 3PO in a magazine or a newspaper, you said?
Yeah, it was the newspaper. And I think that evening I saw the comic on the shelf of Checkers Variety, and I conned my dad into buying it. And in the back seat of his gigantic car, I got my first taste of a spoiler.
And so did you know the big spoiler before you saw the film, or did you put it down at that point and go, "Ooh, I know this thing about Han Solo. I don't want to know anything else."
I think I may have done that. I'm not sure. Or in just typical Brian Skims when he reads, always get, you know, which is sad because I read contracts for a living.
Nice.
Yeah. I may have just missed that one. You know, too wordy. You know, I can't remember now. But the carbonite thing was poured over every panel, you know, like what's happening to him? Why is he like that? Is he dead?
Okay, I'm glad we're gonna get to this, because this is a seminal moment in my life that we're going to discuss. It truly is. I mean, considering how much I love movies in general and pop culture and Star Wars and all that stuff, I could not overemphasize what this moment did to me. Physically, mentally, we'll get to it. But it's true. It really was a traumatic moment in my life. No joking. My first look, two things. One was the poster, that gorgeous, one sheet, you know, with Han looking to the Gone with the Wind.
Oh yeah. It's gorgeous. Shot. Yeah. In fact, I got the, I think I had the wallpaper, which was kind of a knock on that poster. Could be wrong.
Well, everything, even from that poster, everything about this felt different. I just started to get this sneaking suspicion. Not remotely could I have had any idea just how I was going to get the wind knocked out of me sitting in that theater. But I did get a vague sense that something was different here. If you look at that movie poster, not only are our heroes not together, there's just something kind of dark and menacing about that poster. It's not a happy poster. So there was that. The other thing, and this is so vivid, it's extraordinary. And I've since found the clips on YouTube and got chills down the spine. I was in my house in the morning, the Today Show was on, Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill were being interviewed by Jane Pauley, and I'm waiting for the school bus. And it's just like any minute now the bus is going to pull up outside and I'm going to have to run out the front door. But I got to get to this interview. I've got to see this friggin' interview. And the clip that they showed, unless I'm very much mistaken, the clip that they showed is when Han, Leia, Chewie, and 3PO land on Cloud City, and he goes to meet Lando, and Lando says, "You no good, you know, yeah." Across, and does the whole pretends to punch him thing. That was the first clip that I think I ever saw for the film.
And
That was for the interview. And then she interviewed Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill. I remember Harrison Ford being very laid back and interrupting Hamill a few times and just kind of taking over. But Jane Pauley was very delicate, very careful not to give anything away in the interview. And I just barely got to the wrap up and the bus showed up. And I ran out the front door and got on the bus, but I managed to see. There, just for those of you, listen, in case there's any youngsters, there was a time when you had to see something on television once, and that was it. We didn't get to, we couldn't pause it.
And that didn't make me crazy in any way, shape, or form.
No, of course not.
I still have stacks of VHS behind me here in the office.
Right?
Yeah.
For me, that's the squeezable ketchup bottle. Why did it take so long to get a pause button for television? My God, what did we do? How did we survive? So then the next thing, because I want to get right to what you just discussed. The next thing was, and we'll get to the movie in a second. The next thing was the day of the film, which was Saturday morning, waiting in line with my friend Mark Bukulski, lived up the street. We've mentioned him before. He had everything. If I had, you know, one figure from this movie, he had the entire range. That he was that kid.
Oh, I had that kid too.
Yeah, you had the, it was Pete something or Davey something? What was his name, the kid, your kid?
Oh, my kid was called, I call him Rick.
Rick.
Yeah.
So we go to the theater. It's the Harmar Theater in Minnesota, in St. Paul, Roseville. We go to the movie theater and we get in line. My dad took us. He got us McDonald's breakfast.
Classy.
We're waiting in line, you know, for a – must have been a 10 or 11 a.m. Screening on Saturday morning or whatever it was. And we were like the first four or five kids in line. And I'll never forget. I mean, it's truly – you know, it's this iconic now and legendary with these lines. The line went around the building, so it, which must have meant that the people were waiting – they never would have gotten into the first screening. So they were waiting in line for the next – showing, you know, just to get a ticket so they can get in and get a seat and see this thing. We go in again. I've got a few bucks for a soda or whatever, but you know, Mark always had, he had to have everything. And he bought the official Empire Strikes Back movie magazine, tie-in magazine, which he bought it up at the counter. There it was at the counter. We get into the theater. He's paging through it. I'm kind of looking over his shoulder. And I remember Mark, he's a couple years older than me, which, you know, these days is not a big deal. But when
it's,
you're
is a mile then.
Yeah, when I'm 10 and 9 and he's, you know, 11, it's you know, he's a grown up. So where he's looking, I'm looking at the magazine. I'm kind of looking over his shoulder, and suddenly I see this. First, I see a shot of Han, and I read the caption, and it says something along the lines of, you know, but has Han Solo's luck finally run out? And then the next page he turns, there's that shot. It's about a three quarters of the page shot of Han in the carbonite. And I remember looking at the picture and screwing up my face like, what the hell is that? And I pointed to it and I said, what is that? And Mark, being a little irritated, said, well, read the caption. And I read underneath it, and it said, you know, Han Solo frozen in carbonite. And I just vaguely got this, huh, I wonder what that means, never thinking anything else.
Well, because we didn't know what the hell carbonite was.
No, of course, of course. And whatever it was that I'm seeing in this magazine, whatever it is, Han's going to get out of it in time for the credits to roll, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's the other thing is children, like, this was our first experience. We're used to downer endings because we're kids of the 70s, but this was like really the first time something like Star Wars just let us down.
I say this, I've said it 1,000 times, you cannot overemphasize what a left turn
The
Empire Strikes Back was, what it did to a generation of kids, what it did to millions of people, because much as people loved it and they saw it and they were excited and they went back again, whatever, I was that kid. I'm the perfect example of that kid that saw Star Wars like 17 times in the theater. During the Empire Strikes Back theatrical run, I saw it 3 times.
Yeah.
Because it had such a profound effect on me, and it was such an about face. And in hindsight, it is such a ballsy move to do and to make. And I truly think that if Lucas had been more involved with it and more hands-on, I don't think it would have been as dark as it was. I think he was very busy putting, you know, Skywalker Ranch together and fighting, you know, the studio and trying to get more money and things like that. Kirshner and Kasdan were in there getting their hands dirty. But, you know, anybody that's listening has seen Empire Strikes Back at this point, so come on. But, I mean, just the things that happen to the characters, the darkness, the separation of the characters. Yoda is extremely strange and disturbing as a character. The things that happen to Luke, the torture of Han, not just the carbonite, but the torture. That's what gave me nightmares.
Was the
screaming down the hall?
Yeah, there was a lot in there that was a little more adult, less cutesy poo.
I kind of
think that Yoda unintentionally kind of, for me anyways, became the demise of the franchise, because Lucas is a better businessman than I think he is a filmmaker. And I mean that as a compliment. He's pretty shrewd. But he sold, you know, metric tons of Yoda puppets. And I felt like he was like, puppets. Oh, I see. And then, hello, Return of the Jedi. So I've always kind of thought of, as much as I liked Yoda at the time, went for him as Halloween, I always think that he was ultimately bad for the franchise.
Well, he was nothing compared to the fucking Ewoks.
Well, yeah, and that's actually how they should always be referred to, even on toy packaging. But I mean...
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. I may have been a little too angry there. I apologize.
But, you know, I think that Yoda begat the Ewoks. But, you know, I could be wrong.
You know what's funny? You know, Lucas... You got to give him this. He doesn't throw anything away.
No,
he's full of crap when it comes to the outline of what this entire story was going to be. There's a great book out, an unlicensed kind of a thing. I think it's called like The True Story of Star Wars or something like that. And this guy just fanatically, meticulously has gone through every single solitary word that Lucas spoke about the trilogy before, during, and after, but especially before, you know, way back when he, you know, early interviews when he's talking about 12 films, not 9. Then it becomes 9. But anyway, what you find over and over again, besides the fact that he's making it up as he goes, what you find over and over again is that he doesn't throw anything away. And the Ewok thing, I think initially was going to be on the Wookiee planet in the first film. Wasn't there going to be some kind of a giant battle on the Wookiee planet in the first Star Wars film or something?
It could be.
And then he turned it into the Ewoks in the third one. I mean, at one point, I think the entire cast were going to be little people. Wasn't that something?
Nice.
He's kind of weirdly obsessed with little people.
Is he?
You know? Jawas, Ugnaughts, Ewoks.
Willow. Oh, yeah, you got something there.
You know? Yeah, Yoda. He's kind of got a thing about little people.
Yeah, well...
So all that stuff going on. Chewie gets tortured. 3PO gets blown to bits. But Han, you know, really... And besides the psychological shit that happens to Luke at the end... Han gets the worst of it. And I always carried that with me, you know, out of that theater, was that he never asked for any of this. It was a job for hire. He gets involved with these people. You know, he kind of falls for the girl. And what does he get out of it? He gets tortured nearly to death. And the torture, remember that's the scariest thing, is when he gets brought into the cell with Leia, he says, they didn't even ask me any questions.
Oh.
They were just torturing him just to cause pain so that Luke would feel it on Dagobah and he would get in the ship and come to them. Han gets the worst of it. And the story that I'd always heard was the reason that the carbonite thing was put in there was that Ford was the only one of the three principal actors that had not signed a contract for three films. And so Lucas was hedging his bets going, you know, Ford may not want to come back for the third one. I got to leave him hanging or kill him or something. So they kept him frozen. But talk about the definition of a cliffhanger. I mean,
yeah,
you're really – so you know, there it is. We're looking at the magazine. I, you know, make these comments. He says, well, read the caption. I read the caption. Theater goes dark. 2 hours later, I shit you not. 2 hours later, he wants to go shopping because we got some time to kill before my dad picks us up. He wants to go over to the mall, you know, go to the toy store, do this. I just want to go home. I just want to get out of there and go home. And he's thrilled about the movie he's just seen. He goes, what'd you think? And I said, I didn't like it. I didn't think it was that great. You know, I am crying on the inside. And I want to say to him, are you crazy? Look what they did to Han Solo. Like, this is terrible, you know. And it wasn't just what we had just witnessed. It wasn't just that we just sat through this thing and it is brain-effed me to next Wednesday. It's that I have to wait 3 years to know what happened.
Yeah.
I waited 3 years for this, and I got to wait three more years, you know? Anyway, we'll get to all the ins and outs. But so what was your first experience seeing the did you know the big – because I'll say that. It is – I was lucky enough to be a kid that knew nothing about it before I went in. And when that moment happened with Luke, still the most shocking thing I've ever seen in a film.
Yeah, I didn't know that, and when he said it, I was like, he's lying, because, you know, maybe I read something in a Marvel comic and thought that I knew the real score. I saw it in the mall, too, weirdly enough. That's kind of when the mall started getting one of those little movie theaters, it was easier to get to the movies as a kid, because all the theaters were downtown in another town. It was kind of skeevy. And, you know, to get my folks to take me to a movie was kind of rough. And but when it was at the mall, it became one of those things like, oh, it's just over there. We'll go, you know. And I saw a lot more movies from about 79 on.
Okay.
And my dad would always take me to the Star Wars films. And we went in a packed house. I don't know if we saw it opening weekend. I don't think so.
Okay.
But it didn't matter back then, because this was the weird thing. Empire Strikes Back – turned out to be it hung around in theaters forever, and I saw it on Labor Day weekend because it was my friend's birthday. Again, it was the first movie I ever got to go see sans a parent.
You know? Oh, was it? Oh,
yeah,
really?
Yeah. It was my friend Neil's birthday. Neil was a year older than me. He was my neighbor. He was my best friend growing up, and I'll never forget it. We met at his house. We watched the premiere of Drac Pack on Saturday morning.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we drove to in his mom's station wagon. We probably didn't even buckle up. We were probably just in the back of the station wagon. She dropped us off at the mall. We went to see Empire Strikes Back.
Wow.
And it was pretty cool. I mean, and then it came back. Remember, I think like a year later, it came back with Star Wars as a double feature.
Well, yes, it's interesting because we got to go back even further because I thought of this again in light of the Force Wakes Up. Wake Up, Force, Episode 7. trailer that hit. The first, because see, I wouldn't even say this was footage. There were stills. But the first sort of thing, the advanced teaser, I guess you'd call it that now, the advanced teaser trailer for The Empire Strikes Back, I did see before the film came out, obviously. In 1979, they re-released Star Wars theatrically, which was, you know, like you just
said. That's how I saw it. Remember?
It was a big deal. It was a big frickin' deal.
That's the first time I saw it.
So wait, it's the re-release was the first time you saw Star Wars?
Yep.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah, I totally missed that boat.
Oh, that's right. I remember you telling. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were that kid. The people
I
must have
was.
thought you were from, like, Spain or...
The beatings were a little much.
A little rough?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's something. Okay, so they re-released it in 79. And I remember this as well. Not only in the paper, the ad in the newspaper, stick around for the trailer. They would show the trailer at the end. You had to sit through the credits of Star Wars, the end credits, to see the trailer for The Empire Strikes Back. They did not show it at the beginning of the film. And they did that again when they re-released Empire in 82 for the Revenge of the Jedi trailer. You stuck around. Also at those screenings, you got a Kenner booklet.
I remember that Kenner booklet. Yeah.
Special edition Kenner booklet, which came with rebates, which I misread in the paper as coupons. Like, I'd get this Kenner booklet and it would have like coupons, you know, getting a couple bucks off here and there. What it really was rebates. You had to buy like a 12-inch Boba Fett and and an X-Wing, and you'd get a dollar back or some shit.
Which no kid did.
No kid did that. But yeah. I saved the booklet.
I think I took about 10 of them.
Yeah, I had a couple of them. I've still got one of them. I've got all those little Kenner booklets. I have all of them. Do you have any of them? Because I can always scan them for you.
I should probably reunite with that stuff. You know, that's what I wanted to get onto, because, you know, the toys were so integral to the whole thing, and I was cheating on Star Wars with all these different lines, and then, you know, the Empire stuff came out, and I was front row center again, and instead of, you know, it's for Star Wars, I gravitated towards the aliens and the cantina. They were the most interesting to me.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And then Empire did it again because they added all these bounty hunters. And, you know, again, these characters were in the movie for like 10 seconds, and you had to have all of them. And here in Canada, and I think I mentioned before, too, that, you know, I played with toys. And then I got into Star Wars, and I got into these two other guys, and it became like competitive collecting. And it was really, really kind of not a good friendship, you know, because like if one of us left the room, the other two would trash him. And it was always like, hey, I found Dengar, but I won't tell you where. And then, you know, the two of us would be total babies and like, tell us where you got it, you know. And then, you know, I'd have to talk my friend into it. And it really was the complete downside of collecting for me, you know.
That's not healthy.
And, you know, that I remember the big controversy when Rick found in Canada, they released four action figures so quickly that they didn't even have cards. They came vacuum sealed to a black card that just said Star Wars. And it was like the Ugnaught and the Dengar and Han and one other character. I can't remember who it is. And they were on these really weird shrunk wrap cards, and he wouldn't tell me where he got them, but he confided it into my friend, and eventually my friend broke, and I found out it was Sears, you know, and I went out and got them, and it was like such a kerfuffle to get these figures, but I found that line was a bit darker than the early Kenner figures, not as bright. There was a lot of rud in them, you know.
It falls in line with every freaking thing that came out associated with this movie. It just was darker in general. The freaking there was a company called Puffs that made Kleenex.
Yep.
Puffs had a campaign where the Kleenex boxes had, you know, stills from The Empire Strikes Back. Really? That was a big Kleenex boxes. You know, the Dixie cups were a big deal. But even and these are gorgeous now. But do you remember the Boris Vallejo posters from Burger King?
No, but I remember the glasses.
Well, there were the glasses, but I think it's – I don't want to get his name wrong, but Boris Vallejo.
I think it's Vallejo.
Vallejo. There was a set of three or four posters – for The Empire Strikes Back, original art that he did. They're gorgeous. But, you know, one is like Luke on a Tauntaun and then Han. is on the ground, you know, with his pistol out. There's another one that's to do with the carbon freezing chamber.
Oh, yeah.
And then another one I think is Vader and Luke or something. But they're really, really dark artwork. The action figures, this was a big deal. And I'm glad you mentioned it. Well, let me get back to the trailer real quick. This is interesting because I was talking about the Episode 7 trailer. And I was talking about the Phantom Menace trailer. And whatever you think of Phantom Menace, and I hate it, that trailer is extraordinary. I mean, I can watch that trailer today and still be knocked out by how beautifully that thing is put together. And it just – when the trailer ends, you just are on the edge of your seat going, what's next? I cannot wait. Like, what the hell is that? What is that thing? What are those? What's that guy doing? You know? Well, that trailer for Empire – and if you go back and look at it now, find it on YouTube. What's really creepy about it and weird, Harrison Ford does the narration. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
That very first teaser, the Empire Strikes Back teaser trailer, Harrison Ford does the voiceover. And it's like, the next chapter in the Star Wars adventure, the Empire Strikes Back. You know, he does it way over the top and big and weird with Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, and Lando Calrissian.
You know, all those guys that need introduction.
Yeah, it's really. But when you do the intros, they're just stills that come up on screen. But there are different action stills, I think, too. And it's like one of the first shots that you see is of the snowtrooper. And you're just going, oh, wait a minute, that's a stormtrooper with a different, you know, gear. And I remember the same thing happening with the Revenge of the Jedi trailer, when you'd see a quick couple of seconds of a biker scout, and you were like, oh, it's a different stormtrooper. Like, just little snippets, these little flashes of things that just, you know, the Revenge of the Jedi trailer, there's a bit where it's, because again, this is your 11, 12-year-old brain, you know, seeing this and remembering this. The Ugnaught that gets thrown down to the Sarlacc, or to the Rancor pit, he comes shooting out of this little tube or whatever, and this chubby little Gamorrean guard. He's, you know, this green pig guy suddenly in a dungeon. The next shot you see is Han Solo, you know, shooting at something. And my brain put that together as if they were like in a scene together. And so when I eventually saw the film, I'm waiting for this scene where like Han is with this, you know, this Gamorrean guard, whatever. Anyway, I'm saying that's what a great trailer is. And that's what I wanted from this Episode 7 trailer. And I got it here and there. Again, I'm not commenting on it, but that's what's you know, great about whatever's going to be coming from this point on with this new movie. It's like, that's how it was for us back then too. Like, what does this mean? And what is this little picture? And, you know, and this and that. But toy-wise, that would be the next thing. And I remember getting some of the action figures before seeing the film. The toys hit, at least in, you know, in the U.S. or in my town, before the film came out. And it's interesting when you look back on it now, because, you know, after seeing the film, I wanted, the very least, I wanted an updated action figure of Han Solo. In that new jacket, instead of the vest, he had that cool jacket that he wore. But we didn't get that figure until like a year after the movie came out. You know how they kept putting waves out?
Yeah, that was the figure I got. That was the figure I got on that card from Sears. That one was the most exciting to me.
That was the best. So they called it Bespin Han.
Yeah, Bespin outfit. Yeah.
Yeah, and he had, but it was effed up because he had brown pants and brown boots, which is not what he wore in the movie. And he had black hair, which is not what he had in the movie. And he had the wrong pistol, which is not what he had in the movie. But the thing is, the first Han Solo, I mean, all I want, you know, when the first figures came out, I wanted Han Solo. First thing I wanted was, you know, give me the new Han Solo figure. And the first Han Solo action figure that came out was the Hoth Han Solo.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Hoth, Han, the rebel soldier, and Luke. Yeah. Yeah.
No, wait a minute now. Wait, okay. Now, the Luke, the Hoth Luke, did not come out until like a year later.
Yeah, I just realized a couple of years ago going through my Star Wars figures I had as a kid that I never had Hoth Luke. I was using the Rebel Soldier.
Right, because that's right, because he didn't come out with Han.
Yeah.
The Rebel Soldier did. But what were the first ones that came out then? Because if you took that that Empire Strikes Back Hoth Han card, there's a terrible picture of Han Solo on the front. You could barely even make out Harrison Ford. And you flip it over, there were like six or eight figures that you had to collect.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I want to talk about is that I felt like I had to collect them, which is a weird feeling, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Why did you feel that way?
Well, because I was in this competitive group. I was young. I wanted to fit in. That really went away very quickly.
Oh, so this was all about the group.
This was all about the group. Yeah. Yeah. There was a. I guess what Star Wars was 21 backs, and then when it went to Empire, it went to 31 backs. And the first group was a regular Luke, Lando, the Bespin guard, Snowtrooper, FX7, which I still think I have the card for, Leia in the Bespin outfit, Bossk, who was a mail-away figure, I believe, IG-88.
Bossk was a mail-away figure, yeah. You're right.
Hoth, Han, I think that's all of them. Now, this is, I don't know about you, but I maybe lasted a year and a half before I tapped out. I had a falling out with one of those kids, and I just couldn't get excited. Like, I can honestly remember the day it happened, because the one kid I was still friends with, Will, he came out and said, oh, they're issuing a survival kit. Are you going to get it? You just have to mail in, proofs of purchase, and you get those masks they wore when they were in that creature's stomach. And I went, no, I'm not doing that. I don't care. And then, walked by his house one day and he had it. And it was like, oh, that's kind of cool. I wish I'd done that. But, some of the figures they were coming out with, like Zuckuss, and it just ended for me. I just was like, I'm done.
You remember the famous thing about Zuckuss and Forlom?
For love of money? I don't know what Zuckuss is.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It turns out that they had them mixed up all these years.
Oh, okay. I always thought Forlom was Kenner naming it after Lucas.
Oh, that's funny.
That's the rumor I've heard. I don't know if it's funny. True.
You know, can I just say, I am on eBay right now.
That's not good.
And I am looking at a Kenner Hoth outfit Han Solo with 3 days left on it at $30.
Yeah, I think carded Empire isn't that hard to get.
I want this, but it's $30 with 3 days to go. I bet it's going to go for like maybe $100 or something.
I don't know.
Terrible picture of him on the front. You can barely make out that it's even Harrison Ford. But I had this damn thing, and I played with it and played with it. But you're right. I'm looking at the back of the card right now, and what an uninspiring batch of characters to be your first batch from Empire. Lando, Bespin security guard. Luke and the Bespin fatigues is okay. Snowtrooper's cool. FX7, Rebel Soldier, Leia in the Bespin gown,
which I bought and was totally cool with.
She was in the Bespin gown for 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, but look, the Bespin guard looks like he's checking your passport on the Orient Express. Okay, so and I had him too. But I drew the line. Like, my parents got me the cloud car, the twin pod cloud car.
And then, cloud car pilot?
I drew the line. I was like, I didn't need that figure. That guy was unimportant to my story because we didn't even see him in the film.
No, we didn't. We heard him. He was a jerk.
Yeah.
He was a real jerk, but we didn't see him. And there were two Bespin guards. We got two of them. There was like an Asian dude and a black dude.
Yeah, I drew the line at that. I didn't need multi-ethnic Bespin guards. They weren't that important. I was disappointed in having one.
So what were your when you finally saw Empire, were you I'm going to go back and see it next week. Were you, oh my God?
Oh, I was totally full on board. I was a little crestfallen at all this and didn't really want to spend 3 years thinking about it. But yeah, no, I was all in, man. It waned over time, just like it did before, but it just didn't have the legs for me as Star Wars did. But, you know, also I was turning like 12.
Wait, so you were pretty bored with Empire, you said?
No, yeah, like what I'm trying to say is that it lost momentum much quicker than Star Wars for me. But then again, you know, Star Wars I was like 8 going on 10, and then Empire I'm 10 going on 12. So, you know, I started reading Doctor Who novels and, you know, Hasbro launched that pretty good Real American Hero G.I. Joe stuff with that comic, and, you know, my attention went elsewhere.
I see. Well, I was just disappointed in – I mean, I love it now. I've grown to adore The Empire Strikes Back. I think it's brilliant because it's so dark and so different. But at the time, I was devastated. Like I said, I only saw it in the theater like 3 times. And my mother – I've joked about this before, but this is true. My mother can tell you, she says, I will never forget the ashen-faced little boy that came through the door that Saturday. And she turned to me in the kitchen and said, well, how was it? What'd you think? And she said, I said something like, I didn't like it, you know, and I walked right past her and went to my room and shut the door. I mean, I didn't like, you know, curl up in a ball and cry, but she said, I was miserable. I was in a depression for like a couple of months, you know. And it wasn't just what they did to my beloved Han Solo, my character. It was what we had waited for. I mean, it is not the feel good. If you went to the theater as a 9 or 10 year old thinking you were going to get a repeat of, you know, the good guys in the white hats and the bad guys riding the black horse, you know, if you thought that's what you were going to get again, you were going to be sadly mistaken.
You know what? The other thing I will say about, I'm a tremendous fan of the first movie. I find it very, very watchable. I collect only vintage Star Wars stuff from like a very early time because it really, really reminds me of how fresh it was, you know, and it's also a lot to do with budget and, you know, let's not go nuts here, Brian. Otherwise, I'll have the 12-inch dolls in here and I'll have everything else.
Right.
Building cantinas, you know, but my wife is a ravenous Star Wars fan and she's a bit.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. When I first met her, she was reading Star Wars novels, which in 1992 was like, who reads Star Wars novels? They're Star Wars novels, you know. Like I was way out of that scene.
Would those have been the, what's he called?
The Episode 7 novels, like before there was an Episode 7,
right? But you know the guy with the
you know the guy.
He's got blue skin and he walked.
No, not the salamander. The Prince Jizor stuff.
No, not him. Heir to the Empire? Was that the name of the book?
Could be. Yeah, I'd never read it. I'm not a fiction reader. But
you did learn to read last year, right?
Yes, see Jane Run. But you know, I like to read boring business history books.
All right.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I did not know that you were not. Let me spit this out the right way the first time. I did not know you were
illiterate.
Not a nonfiction. No, not a fiction reader.
Not much of a fiction reader. No.
Not much of a fiction reader.
No. No.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Strangely, I'm not. I like comics, okay, but when it comes to books, I tend to read a lot of biographies.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
That's all right.
But she was reading that, and where I was going with this is,
sorry,
Empire is not as rewatchable as Star Wars.
Now, how do you mean that?
Well, Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm alone. Maybe we're both alone, her and I. And but the we find Dagobah gets a little long in the tooth nowadays.
That's true. Yeah. I would agree with that. Yeah. It can. Yoda can be tough to take. You know. I just think the dialogue is wonderful. It's pretty clear, you know, watching it over and over again. It's pretty clear to me that Harrison Ford was this was his moment. And there's you know, making ofs that sort of document this. He's highly aware that Star Wars opened the door and gave the opportunities. But I think he was highly aware that Empire Strikes Back was going to be it for him. This was going to be the one that put him over the top. And every opportunity he gets, he's sitting in a corner with, you know, Irvin Kershner, or, you know, having lunch with Lawrence Kasdan, you know, tweaking the script here and there to really squeeze out the juiciest bits of dialogue and scenes that he possibly can for Han Solo. And it's all there, I think. He gets the best dialogue, the rapport between he and Leia, the way he sort of, you know, handles that, the stuff on Bespin with Lando, the sacrificial lamb that he is, and of course the famous "I love you, I know," that was all Harrison Ford. You know, that the original scene, as everyone probably knows, the original scene was "I love you, I love you too."
Ah.
And he said he'd never say that. It doesn't. And he fixed it, you know, and suggested the line that he delivered with Kershner and Kasdan without Carrie Fisher's involvement. And there's a, you know, it's documented in one of the making of books that she's really pissed off when she shows up on the set and says, "Well, you guys changed something. Well, how come I wasn't involved with this?" And she's really irritated that they changed this dialogue. And she's and Kershner's losing his patience because he's going, "Carrie, I got a million things. What do you want?" And then she says, "But, you know, well, I wanted to be consulted." Harrison Ford never even has to deal with her getting pissy. She brings it right to Kershner. But Ford's wonderful in it. I mean, he really. Legend has it that Tom Selleck was either cast or on the absolute cusp of being cast as Indiana Jones. There are screen tests with him as Indiana Jones. He's right there. And then this, you know, CBS says, "We're doing Magnum PI. It's going to be a huge show." And the attitude was then, "Well, that's not going to be our Indiana Jones. This guy's going to be on TV every week. You know, who cares? He's going to be Indiana Jones. And what are we going to do?" Well, Lucas always had this thing. He said it way back with American Graffiti when he was casting for Star Wars, that he did not want to put anybody in Star Wars that he'd already used in American Graffiti, which, you know, as we know, you know, Ford was in both. Mm-hmm. So he had the same edict for Indiana Jones, that he wasn't going to use anybody in this movie, this franchise that came from Star Wars. And legend has it that Spielberg went to a screening, a preview screening of The Empire Strikes Back the night before, or that night or the next morning, whatever it was. He calls Lucas and says, "I know who Indiana Jones is going to be." And this is, again, legend. Lucas says, "I know who you're going to say." And Spielberg, "What?" He's Harrison Ford. "Yes, Harrison Ford." Because he had seen Empire Strikes Back and said, "That's the guy." Like, of course, he knew who he was with Star Wars, but Empire, again, I think that's what – I mean, Raiders put him over the top. Raiders, like, made him pretty much A-list, I think.
I think so.
But Empire really did it for Harrison Ford. That was the he took a fairly one-dimensional character from Star Wars. And, again, he was the best human in the first film, too. He had the best dialogue and everything. Mm-hmm. He took that – as a one-dimensional guy and really made him something in Empire. You know, because it is sad what happens to him, and I almost feel like you're as concerned about what's going to happen to him by the end of the film as whether Vader is Luke's father or not, which is far larger. I just think it works on so many levels. I mean, the separating of the group. No. I just think that the movie works on so many levels, and it's funny, it's dark, it's weird, it's actually incredibly dark. A lot of the things that that happen. You know, Lando as a character, you know, what he does. I mean, the shot, there's some great shots too. You know, I always think of the shot where like R2 is kind of pushing Luke in the hallway, you know, kind of nudging him. You notice that when they're on Bespin?
Yeah, yeah.
That always struck me as just kind of odd. And just the chase, you know, on Bespin, when like Lando keeps looking around the corner, like, who is that back there? You know, and that sort of thing. The fight with Vader is brutal. I mean, Luke gets the shit beat out of him. I mean, it's really, this is the hero, you know, for so many kids. I mean, I think a lot of kids, it was either you were a Luke kid or a Han kid. I was the Han kid, but Luke was the hero to millions of kids, and he gets the tar beat out of him in The Empire Strikes Back.
He sure does.
It also is just, you know, very, very blatantly waving in your face, hey, guess what, kids? Your hero wasn't ready. You know, you're the hero, the tough guy that's the, you know, the good guy and the hero of the movie, he wasn't ready to go up against this guy to fight him. He lost. Everybody loses in this movie. You know, that's what's so, I guess that's the best summing up between Star Wars and Empire is Star Wars, everybody wins. They get new lives and they, new adventures and, you know, so on. Everybody loses in Empire.
And, yeah, it really is a game changer.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you guys, is it that you, when you go to rewatch, see Star Wars, like I said, I can watch it every day.
There's some amazing parts to Empire, and it is a terrific film. And if it's on, you know, Spike TV plays it all the time. Are you
I
there?
They
do that. And, you know, if they play it, I get, you know, stuck just the same way Goodfellas or, you know, a lot of movies. You just want to catch memorable lines like See You in Hell or, you know, just I can watch them and watch them again. I think one of the things that I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I hate the reworked versions of the movies. And
yeah.
They do take a lot of the enjoyment out of all the films. Now, Lucas didn't really screw around with Empire a lot because it was pretty great. But,
yes.
You know, there's little things that bug me about that. I don't need, my imagination works that I don't need the actor playing the Emperor. So what? The actor changed.
Oh,
big deal, you know?
I hate, and you know what else they did? You know what else they did that it is sinful enough that they took Boba Fett's voice out of there.
Oh, I know, and I loved Boba Fett's voice.
They took his voice out of there, and they put in the friggin' Australian guy who played Jango Fett.
Yeah, I don't really mind that guy, but I mean, it didn't need to get done. It didn't need the best one I heard thus far, and I can't take credit for this. Someone else said this is why is it a ghost of Ben Kenobi as an old guy,
yeah,
Yoda, and then his dad as a young guy? Like, would he know who that is? Like, you know?
Yeah, no, exactly. And what it also does is go. Oh, wait a second. So we're going to reset and go back to when he was still kind of good. And that's where the ghost reboots from. You know what I mean? Like that. And that wasn't even a change that was made for the theatrical release in 97 when he rebooted, you know, the special editions. That was an addition that was made on DVD after the prequel trilogy was made. So he kept tweaking. He tweaked about 17 more times after the 97 editions that came out in the theaters, which is weird. I mean, he did little things like on the DVD, I think the Blu-ray now in the newest DVD, because he's also done that. He's made changes, and then the next edition of DVDs that have come out, things have been tweaked or changed or whatever. So, or maybe I dreamt this, but a defining moment, really, in Empire. And it's certainly a defining moment for Luke. His hand has been cut off. He just got the piece of information that is going to change his life forever, supposedly, from Vader. And join me and we can rule the galaxy together as father and son. He can either take his hand and go with him off to the promised land, or he lets go. Doesn't know where he's going to fall or what's going to happen. And he lets go. And I swear, in the latest tweak that he did, he yells.
Yeah, he does like a goofy yahoo-y, you know, that thing. That is, you didn't dream that. Somebody
didn't dream it.
No,
he yells on the way down. I mean, what? I'm just saying, of all the things to play with or tweak or that might even bother you, why on earth would you add a yell to Luke's iconic just letting go and I'm going to freaking die now, I don't care what happens? Why would you add a yell? Why would you have that suddenly have the character yell? He's not – the yell – I'm sorry, I'm breaking this down like a nerd. The yell implies surprise or shock or I didn't know this was going to happen. Oh, shit, I'm falling.
Yeah, you know? it robs the character of a dignity that he had.
Exactly. Perfectly put. I've been trying to get to that, but I couldn't, and you said it perfectly. That's exactly what it does. It robs the character of whatever dignity he was supposed to have when he did that. And yet, I swear, I didn't dream this either. And yet, the famous blooper in Star Wars, when the stormtroopers come in the room that the droids are hiding in on the Death Star, and the third or fourth trooper back bumps his head on the door,
that's unfixable.
He added a sound effect.
Oh.
He added the sound of him hitting his head on the thing, because that's Lucas embracing stuff now, where like now, of course, he's walking around in a T-shirt that says, you know, Han shot first or whatever, you know, that stuff. That's Lucas embracing his own idiocy. He added a sound effect of the stormtrooper hitting his frickin' head. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
I'm well aware of the he should have put the brush down, man. And I've heard rumors of Disney, and this would be an amazing cash grab if they did it, just re-releasing the first three theatrical prints of the first three films on Blu-ray. I'm there if they do that.
Well, that was the big rumor. That was as soon as that announcement got made, the first rumor that made the rounds was that watch your emails, because Disney, the first thing they're going to do is release the definitive versions on DVD, on Blu-ray, because that you cannot – the only way you can watch the original cut is from the three individual releases that were put out. This is in the States. I don't know about Canada. The three individual releases, not the box set, not the special edition box set, but there were three individual releases that were double discs. And the first disc is the special edition version from the late 90s, from 97, 98, whatever it was. The second disc is the original theatrical version from the original release, 77, 80, and 83. And it's just such a throwaway. Even on the packaging, it's just so like, you know, disc two, 1977 version. I mean, it's just like a, yeah, and there's this too if you want it. And that's the only way to see them. Otherwise, you're stuck. Even the Blu-rays, you're stuck with that. Here's what's trippy, though. We should wrap it up. But
oh, yeah. Just
last quick thing we'll say. Have you seen any of the deleted scenes from The Empire Strikes Back or the original all three films? Have you seen any of the deleted scenes on the Blu-ray discs?
No, I haven't. Maybe some of the Star Wars ones. But I wouldn't buy into them.
Yeah, they're interesting. The Star Wars ones are kind of cool. What's interesting about some of the Empire ones are just how drastically had, you know, 20 seconds here or 40 seconds there have been left in, how drastically it would have changed certain things in the story. For example, there's a scene in The Falcon when they rescue Luke at the end, where Luke says Boba Fett. It sounds funny, but he says, wait, you know, the bounty hunter took him or something, and Luke says, like, Boba Fett or something. And it's like you realize it's the first time that the name is spoken in the films. But that actually didn't happen until Return of the Jedi when Han Solo says it. But had it been kept in, it would have been Luke. There's something else in there, too, where I think there's a bit where he's Vader. Oh, there's a thing from Jedi where you see Luke on Tatooine putting the last little finishing touches on his lightsaber.
Yeah, in a cave. Yeah, I did see that. Yeah.
And he puts it into R2. And 3PO's outside the cave waiting for R2, like, what are you doing in there? Mm-hmm. And R2 comes out and you realize that's when he's going to shoot the thing out of his, you know, you see the buildup. But as that's happening, on the new Death Star, Vader gets dropped off. He goes right to the meditation chamber and tries reaching out to Luke, to talk to Luke. And you just, it's such a cool thing. And you're like, why would you cut that from the movie? That was cool, you know? Little things like that here and there. So, you know, it's not all bad, the stuff that we've gotten in the wake, you know.
No, I would never say it was all bad. I can't get on board. And that's okay. I mean, I'm not complaining about it online. I guess I am now, but
finally got to.
Yeah, I finally wrote that rant. But it's just, you know, I still have the VHS. Remember, like, in 93 or 94, they re-released the first three films, and they were just cleaned up VHS copies.
Is that the campaign that was, like, Vader, Stormtrooper, Yoda?
Yep.
Yep. Yep. I remember that.
I have I have two of them. I don't have the Return of the Jedi. I didn't care.
Hey, man, I was a Laserdisc kid.
Oh, so was I.
Early 20s, I had the Laserdisc player, and I had, you know, because that was the only way to get it on widescreen or to get a trailer or any extras, and I had that ginormous triple, you know, quadruple Laserdisc set with the hardcover book and the trailers and all that stuff. You remember that big thing?
Oh, yeah. Well, my friend, when I lived in the city, my friend Sean, still friends with to this day, he had this amazing Laserdisc collection, and he was two flights down, my friend.
Oh, nice.
So, and I remember watching Flash Gordon in widescreen.
Yeah.
On my crappy, you know, Zenith television, going, it doesn't get any better than this. You know?
Oh, yeah, man. Laserdisc was...
Oh, yeah.
Shit. Just weighed 75 pounds a disc.
And you had to flip them.
And you had to flip them.
Oh, man, that flipping.
That flipping was a
You might crack. As well have been changing reels, you know?
That's true, I know. But widescreen, I felt like
oh,
I
was... Oh, yeah, you felt like a star.
Yeah, I was in on something that very few were in on, that, you know...
Remember Last of the Mohicans came out, the Daniel Day-Lewis remake, and it was only released in widescreen on VHS, and my in-laws rented it. They weren't my in-laws at the time, but... And we were watching it, and what's wrong with the picture? You know, and I had to explain to five different people what letterboxing was. And when I went to return the video, there was a post-it note that said, it's supposed to look that way on Last of the Mohicans. It's just, I, you know, I felt like the coolest man in the room.
Oh, I was that... I went from kind of cool to being maybe like a snob. I don't know what, but having to tell people over and over again, like, what's Laserdisc? Why do you have a Laserdisc player? That just seems so cumbersome.
What's with, like, this pan and scan movie? Ooh.
And then I'd have to explain, well, what you don't understand is you've been missing so much of the picture for so many years. You don't even know it.
Man.
Man. I'm mainlining movies every day.
Yeah.
I'm freebasing. You have no idea what's going on. So, yeah.
I have 17 different cuts of Blade Runner.
I lugged my Laserdisc player to L.A. 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, on my stack of laser discs. They were not – A, they were not cheap.
Nope.
And B, they were heavy.
I cried when I dropped mine off at the Goodwill because it no longer worked.
Yep. Well, I mean, that's when DVDs kicked off, I was like, okay, finally. Now we're getting somewhere.
Well, for me, it was Laserdiscs never really took off enough, and I moved to the burbs, and you absolutely could not buy them anywhere here. So, you know, it became this kind of thing of like, all right, I hope I like watching the Omega Man again.
Yeah. Well, I was a big, you know, they would put the Bond films out in box sets.
Oh, yeah.
Like the Connery, the first three Conneries in a big box set that was like $150 with trailers and stuff. I mean, that was where it was at for me, you know. But there's an episode. The Laserdisc revolution that never came.
Yep. I'm still holding a vigil.
All right.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Have a Merry Christmas if we don't talk to you.
We can be scarred by The Empire Strikes Back, but we can still smile about it when we talk about it.
Yep, I think I'll go play with my Han Solo Bespin edition figure. Even though you've now pointed out that his outfit is wrong and you've ruined him for me.
It's completely wrong. But I'll give you one other little pointer for the Han Solo Hoth edition of the action figure, which is a fun
pop his head off.
You can pop his head off. There's a little – his holster has a little loop, you know, on the side of the figure – where the holster is molded in. It's not an open holster that you can actually put the pistol in, okay? But it's got a little molded hoop, okay? And you can take the magazine cartridge section of the Han Solo laser pistol,
mm-hmm.
and it slides right into that loop perfectly, as if he's got a little holster.
I did not know that.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Been doing that since 1980. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays all around if we don't get to you. And hope you enjoy this little stroll down Bespin Lane.
Bespin Lane. That's great. See you, everybody.
All right. Bye. Yeah.